You're listening to Think Out Loud on OPB. I'm Dave Miller. What is the best way to get people to care about environmental issues? Over the last few years, some conservation groups have chosen to emphasize utilitarian arguments. They talk about how a healthy environment can benefit humans in tangible ways. A recent paper, co-authored by a philosopher at Oregon State, argues that those groups maybe should take a different tack. The researchers say that people also respond to the notion that the natural world has intrinsic value, that it matters in and of itself, regardless of human needs or wants. We'll hear from an environmental group in just a few minutes, but I'm joined first by Michael Nelson, professor of environmental ethics and philosophy at Oregon State University and a co-author of this paper. Michael Nelson, good to have you on the show.
Thanks for having me.
Why did you want to work on this paper?
Well, I think that what I want to do in this paper is suggest that an intrinsic value route to conservation is actually a viable route. There's a tendency within the conservation community, for various reasons, to dismiss an intrinsic value appeal to conservation.
What are some of those reasons you think that that approach has been minimized?
Well, part of it is just we just don't understand what intrinsic value is, but we also think that it has certain qualities. We think that if you appeal to intrinsic value or a non-anthropocentric argument, that you're being misanthropic, that you're disparaging human beings. And I also think we just don't appreciate how much people actually do value intrinsic value. So I think we mess up some of the empirical claims that underpin intrinsic value.
You wrote, "Skeptics of nature's intrinsic value sometimes ask, what good is it anyway? Where it might refer to the giant burying beetle, the devil's hole pupfish, the dusky seaside sparrow, or any object in nature whose instrumental value is not appreciated." How do you answer your own question? I mean, how do you figure out the intrinsic value of the devil's hole pupfish?
Well, one way to suggest that something has intrinsic value is just to ask yourself, what good am I? Why do I think I have value? Or why do I think other humans have value? And what we'll end up doing, I think, at some point is we'll point to a quality. We'll say, well, it's because I'm sentient or because I'm rational or because I can use language. And what we'll very quickly discover, if we've read any Darwin whatsoever, is that any quality that we think we humans possess is also possessed in some way by the non-human world. So we can appeal to similar qualities to ground intrinsic value. That's just one route to it.
But so for the pupfish in particular, where do you start? I mean, is it sentience? Is it potentially feeling pain? Where do you actually begin? And then what kind of a value do you end up with?
So with fish are actually tough. We have quite a lot of arguments over whether fish are sentient or not. So some people would suggest that's a pretty good route to go because we'll see sentience in fish, and other people say we won't. So actually, the scientific community is somewhat split on that. But I don't think that's the only way to go. I think there are other appeals that you can make. You can talk about beauty. For instance, that the world is a beautiful place and we ought not to destroy beauty. And that can, I think, for some people, ground a notion of intrinsic value. I don't think there's just one way to ground it. I think there are multiple ways to ground it.
I'm so glad you brought up beauty because I read your paper and I read it too quickly, but I didn't see the word beauty in it. I didn't see the word spiritual in it. I don't think that I read about aesthetic concerns. Where do those fit in, and how do you separate those from the human who's appreciating that beauty?
You probably didn't see those appeals because we were publishing in a scientific journal.
Yeah.
Probably would have gotten drummed out if we would have made those kinds of appeals, unfortunately. So we don't make those appeals. What we really try to do is stick to the confusions that people have over intrinsic value. But I think you can. I mean, in my other work, I have tried to make those kinds of appeals to something like intrinsic value.
One of the things you just mentioned is that you actually you did your own survey to try to find out what people think about these issues. What did you find?
Yeah, we did a survey of Ohioans. So it's a battleground state. But then we've also since then done a national survey. And what we discover when we ask, in particular with regard to wildlife, do wildlife have inherent value? And we even define it for people, value above and beyond their utility to people. Or when we ask them whether they agree with the statement that wildlife are only valuable if people get to utilize them in some way. So the first one, you'd have to answer yes to attribute intrinsic value. The second one, you'd have to answer no to attribute intrinsic value. is we found high attribution of intrinsic value, over 80%. And then that bore out in the national survey as well. We also found that it didn't break down according to demographics. So whether they were rural or urban, or young or old, or rich or poor, or hunters and trappers and bird watchers, all of these are very high attributions of intrinsic value. I think the take home is when you give people the opportunity to express that, they seem to actually express that.
Michael Nelson, stay with us. I mentioned that we have another voice here. Kathy McDonald is in the studio with me, Oregon Director of Conservation Programs for the Nature Conservancy. Good to have you here.
Thank you, Dave. It's great to be here.
Can you just give us the Nature Conservancy's take or your take on this debate on how you reach people, whether you're going to focus on utilitarian messaging or some other larger idea of intrinsic value and beauty and spirituality in nature?
Well, I completely agree with Dr. Nelson. In my work, I've worked in conservation in Oregon for over 30 years, and it's clear to me that everybody sees or most people believe in the intrinsic value of nature and act on that in all sorts of ways, whether it's somebody involved in a conservation organization or a rancher or somebody who's developing land. You know, there are lots of ways that people express the fact that they care about nature and understand its intrinsic value. We really like to talk to people about both because we think both are really important in accomplishing our mission. There are times when the beauty of something or its intrinsic value and your feeling of responsibility for protecting something is exactly what we need to think about as we advance our work. But there are other times when it's really important to understand nature's benefits and the utilitarian value of nature because we can make better decisions if we understand those things that can have benefits for both people and nature.
What's an example of a message you might give out, say, in a fundraising letter that's based on a utilitarian idea?
Well, I think the kind of information about the ways that nature benefits people, how it filters water, how it might reduce utility bills by filtering water better than mechanical methods, the ability for us to make communities healthier by protecting nature. Those are the kinds of things that we would include to help people understand those dual benefits.
So you might emphasize those things and say, you know, this is a reason to preserve these wetlands. They'll help the watershed for your water bill or for your health, as opposed to saying or having this be the lead sentence in the paragraph. This is a beautiful place, and it's been there for a million years. We want it to be there for a million more.
Well, I think when we talk to people about both values and do that in words and in beautiful images because that's how people connect. And it's not either or. It's both.
Do you see, though, any kind of a shift in priorities, in messaging priorities at the Nature Conservancy in the time that you've been there?
You know, I think that when I first started, we used to think a lot about our work as protecting nature from people. And at that time, you know, the main concern we were trying to deal with was habitat loss. Today, we really think about protecting nature with people because it's really clear that to make the most conservation happen, you have to engage people not only in supporting that work but in helping you think about the best solution for that work. And that takes involving a lot of different kinds of people. So
If you're just tuning in, by the way, I'm talking right now with Kathy McDonald, Oregon Director of Conservation Programs for the Nature Conservancy, and Michael Nelson, Professor of Environmental Ethics and Philosophy at Oregon State University. You can read the paper that Michael Nelson was a co-author of. There's a link on our website, opb.org/thinkoutloud. A few comments from our website, Metaphase, on our site, wrote, "For me, the intrinsic value of nature's gifts is enough. If we are going to foster a mostly intrinsic appreciation, then we need to do a much better job of getting kids out into nature. Many simply do not have access." Cameron, on our Facebook page, that's OPBTOL, wrote, "I would say both. How we treat other life on our planet represents us as a human race. Natural resources such as forests and wildlife ensure a healthy climate, clean air, and provide amazing places we can visit and enjoy. Michael Nelson, so we heard Kathy's version of the point she might hit in my question of a fundraising letter if she were going to be focusing on the utilitarian side of this. What would you focus on in your letter if you were going to go for the other side, for the intrinsic values of nature? What would you write?
You'll probably be able to tell that I shouldn't be working for an NGO. That's a very good question. I think what I would write would be much more poetic. It would involve what happens, or what it would be an explanation of what intrinsic value is, and what happens when we lose things of intrinsic value. Things of intrinsic value deserve to be treated with respect, and when they are lost, we grieve. And when they are lost, we see this as a tragedy. And if we're the agent of that loss, that we believe we committed a moral wrong. Those are all things I think we want to avoid. And the worry is that if you don't attribute something intrinsic value, you don't engage in grief and tragedy and something like a moral wrong, that you kind of callously and quickly are allowed to move away from it. And I think I would maybe appeal to that in a letter.
Kathy, should you include more moral language in your messaging?
I think that you can cover a lot of the message that Dr. Nelson got across without having to bring that last piece in. Obviously, that's something that the reader and beholder can think about themselves from my perspective. So, yes, absolutely. That the way that he presented it, I think, is a powerful way to get to people. I think our fundraisers would probably do a better job of articulating the best response to that last part. But I think a lot of people come to that themselves, and you don't have to tell them to think like that.
Michael Nelson, what is the danger in your mind of putting too much of an emphasis on the utilitarian aspects of nature?
Well, I mean, a utilitarian justification for anything is by its very nature contingent. It's always subject, sort of by its very definition, to being replaced. It's always replaceable. Things with intrinsic value are not so readily replaced. So I worry about that messaging. I also worry about, I suppose, creating a situation where things are guilty until proven innocent versus a situation where they're innocent until proven guilty. I think intrinsic value arguments shift the burden of proof onto those people who would rather despoil nature and away from those who want to preserve it. So I think there's actually quite a bit at stake, especially if you just think about the notion of where the burden of proof lies.
What do you mean by that, the guilty until proven innocent, if we're talking, say, about wetlands?
Well, we would preserve it unless there was one heck of a good reason not to preserve it, much like we preserve human life unless there's one heck of a good reason not to preserve human life.
Oh, you're saying, and if we focus on utilitarian arguments, then instead you'd have to prove that it serves some purpose for humans first before you decide to preserve it.
That's exactly right.
We got this from a frequent commenter on our site, and I will say first we have about a minute and a half left, so maybe this isn't fair, but he says, are humans and nature compatible? Kathy McDonald.
Yes.
You say that. What about when we reach 9 billion humans? At what point
I think the only hopeful answer is to say yes, because we have too much of an impact on our planet, and unless we think about how to make people and nature work together, it's going to have a negative impact on us as a human race, as well as the nature that's really vital to supporting us.
Michael Nelson.
I would say if we choose to be, it's a choice about whether or not we are. If we choose wrong, I worry about both nature and human beings.
Michael Nelson and Kathy McDonald, thank you very much.
Thank you.
Thanks.
Michael Nelson is a professor of environmental ethics and philosophy at Oregon State University. Kathy McDonald is the Oregon Director of Conservation Programs for the Nature Conservancy. Tomorrow, I should say Monday on this show, tomorrow we're going to have a day off, but tomorrow the Oregon Republican Party is going to be choosing its new leader. We're going to talk to that new leader on Monday. We're also going to talk to an Oregon oncologist. He has been a longtime defender of the state's death with dignity law, and now he's dealing with his own terminal cancer. If you missed any part of today's show, you can download this and all of our shows whenever you want. Our website is opb.org/thinkoutloud. Our nightly rebroadcast is at 8 p.m. Our production staff includes Julie Sabatier, Dave Blanchard, and senior producer Allison Frost. Courtney Christie and Riley Stevenson are our wonderful production assistants. Our engineers are Zach Carver-Gustin and Graham Nystrom. Stephen Cray is our technical director. Sage Van Wing is our executive producer. I'm Dave Miller. Thanks so much for tuning in this week. Enjoy your weekend.